My name is Kayla
Hi, my name is Ikra Nadeem.
Shakir, and we are both medical students at SUNY Downstate Health Sciences University in Brooklyn, New York. This is Between the Lines, What Your Medical School Didn't Teach You About Health Equity, a podcast where we, as medical students, speak with local activists to examine the impact of social justice issues on healthcare in our communities. Today's episode tackles one aspect of reproductive justice through the lens of birthing doulas. So, to start, we wanted to share some statistics on maternal mortality and more specifically, Black maternal mortality. Maternal mortality is defined as death during childbirth or within 1 year after birth. Maternal morbidity includes conditions or complications of pregnancy and childbirth that could have resulted in death, but fortunately did not in that specific case. In the United States, the maternal mortality rate is 20 per 100,000 live births, and this rate has increased 58% since 1990, despite medical advances and increases in healthcare spending. Compared to white maternal mortality is 3 to 4 times higher in Black individuals, 2 times higher in American Indians and Alaskan Natives, and 1.8 times higher in Hispanics. And in New York City, this disparity is even greater, with Black maternal mortality 5 times higher than in whites. Some of the leading causes of maternal mortality associated with this Black-white disparity are preeclampsia and eclampsia, postpartum cardiomyopathy, amniotic embolism, and postpartum hemorrhage. And the worst part about this is that up to 60% of these deaths are preventable. And a recent report showed that in New York City, nearly 78% are preventable, and around 46% could be in part attributed to discrimination. So there's definitely a huge disparity here. And in terms of a more mainstream discussion of Black maternal mortality, it is apparent that these racial disparities transcend social status, education, and income. We saw this through the well-known example of Serena Williams, who nearly died of a pulmonary embolism or a blood clot in the lungs after giving birth to her daughter due to a delay in the diagnosis and some disregard for her concerns about having a clot. New York City is really at the heart of this issue, with many high-profile cases of Black maternal mortality in recent years. Here in Brooklyn, where we go to medical school, Sha'asia Washington died in 2020 while in the operating room for an urgent C-section. She had been complaining about difficulty breathing after receiving the epidural for the C-section, but was ignored by the anesthesiologist and the other physicians in the room, and minutes later went into cardiac arrest while the baby was being delivered and unfortunately was unable to be resuscitated. Also in 2020, in the Bronx, Amber Rose Isaac died from postpartum hemorrhage after having to undergo an emergency C-section for HELLP syndrome, which is a pregnancy complication that's usually not fatal. She had noted decreasing platelet counts during blood work she received throughout the pregnancy, but was told not to worry about it and that she could only get telehealth visits, not in person, because of the pandemic. Earlier intervention might have been able to prevent this emergency C-section and save her life. Back in 2019 in Brooklyn, Shimani Gibson died from a pulmonary embolism 2 weeks following the birth of her son. She had been complaining of shortness of breath in the days after delivery, but was sent home with no further workup. When her symptoms worsened and she returned to the hospital, her mother specifically asked the medical professionals whether her daughter might have a clot, to which they responded with questions about drug use, but not her recent delivery, and her eventual diagnosis came too late. So it's clear that in New York City, there are stark disparities in maternal morbidity and mortality, and there are multiple ways to address these apparent inequities. One possible solution that has gained popularity in recent years is the incorporation of doulas on birth teams. Today, we're going to talk with Miss Christine Miller, a full spectrum community doula and spiritual herbalist who has worked with Ancient Song, a birth justice organization based here in Brooklyn, with a community doula program servicing low-income people of color, and more recently, working with Just Birth Space, a free and virtual doula support service. So, hi, Christine, and welcome. We are really happy to have you here. In your own words, if you could please just introduce yourself a little bit more.
Hi everyone, my name is Christine Miller, and I am born and raised in Augusta, Georgia, and spent quite a few time, maybe like a little over 2 years in New York. And during that time, I was able to study birth justice as a full spectrum community doula, as well in my last year as a spiritual herbalist. And yeah, that's pretty much who I am. It's what takes up most of my day. I'm also a parent to a very feisty 4-year-old daughter. Yeah, that's who I am.
Great to have you here and be able to talk to you. First, we just want to get to know a little bit more about you and your doula work. So, could you tell us about some of your life experiences that led you to enter this line of work?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before that I am a mother. Shortly before that, I kind of was looking up what doulas were and was a bit interested in it. I've always been a person who wanted to take the holistic route of things. So learning that there could be someone to support you emotionally and physically as you go through these transitions was pretty cool. But when I actually started planning my own pregnancy is when I dove a little deeper into what a doula was and what a doula does. I personally did not have the best birthing experience. I felt like I was not being listened to. I was not being heard. Though I was blessed enough to have a friend who was in the room who was advocating for me, I often wonder, like, what if I had an actual doula there? What if I would have prepped myself a little more, just had a little more insight of the things that happens within those spaces? Where would I have been? And since I had such a, I want to say a negative experience, but it was definitely a life-shifting experience when I gave birth to my daughter. It inspired me to want to get into the work to teach people or to let people know just about all the different things that could possibly happen to them if they went into these spaces, or also to make sure that they had the proper tools to navigate in different spaces.
That's a powerful story, and sorry to hear that maybe your birth experience wasn't the best. But I feel like it's always important to hear about people who are in this line of work, but also have that personal experience that they can kind of contribute to and carry forward. In terms of what you do as a doula, what exactly is a doula in the first place, and how do they fit into the care team for pregnant individuals before, during, and after the birthing process?
Yeah, so a doula is someone who is a part of your care team, your support team. They're the person that's there to help you emotionally through those transitions of life, right? So when you first become pregnant, even sometimes before you're pregnant, there are so many different spectrums of a doula. It really depends on what type of support the person is needing. So say if someone is already pregnant, so they will want a doula possibly who's going to be there to help them in their first trimester when they're thinking of all the nauseating things, or they need to know if this is normal. Typically, we redirect them to their doctors or to their providers, to their midwives, because we're not trained to assist like in clinical spaces. But if you have someone who you want to know more information, if you need someone to help you look up things, someone who just stands as a credible source of different things that you could possibly experience or your body's going to experience, you can go to a doula. Say if you don't really have that many people who are a part of your care team, right? Like if you don't have a big family, if you don't have a supportive partner, like these are things that your doula can kind of help fill in, like when you're going through the emotion of beginning to carry a child. Even if you've already given birth, say if you need a doula there after you've given birth to your child, you might need someone who's going to help you cook meals. You might need someone who's going to help you do laundry, someone who might just watch your older children while you spend time with the baby. It's just like endless. It really just depends on which transitional phase you are in life and what level of support you need. And a doula can be there to help you emotionally, physically, it looks like as well, like in the middle of labor, if you need someone to help massage your back, if you need someone to help you just breathe through your contractions, just all those little pieces, the doula kind of just fills in those gaps.
Okay, gotcha. So it sounds like doulas are there for information, for education, but also just emotional support. And like you were talking about support during labor. And it sounds like it's a process that's very tailored to each individual patient. Is that right?
Yeah, it definitely shifts. Like, and it could be someone, both people, two pregnant people are not going to have the same amount of needs because support looks different for each person. It depends on what they are already receiving outside of the doula. Like, that's one of my favorite questions to ask is, what does your current support look like? You know, or it's like, what are your experiences when you go to your prenatal appointments? Because someone who's having a great time with their doctors or with their providers is like not going to come to you with so many questions. But if it's someone who's gone in this space and they feel like their voice is not being heard, or they feel like their voice is not being honored, their level of support is going to look different. They might need someone to reassure them that, yeah, like what I'm thinking is right. Like I'm not getting the right amount of care. Like, you know, and they might need someone to advocate for them to choose an alternative or somewhere for them to go. So, yeah, it definitely looks different based upon the person.
So it sounds like doulas really cover a lot of ground in their work. Are there any misconceptions about the work that doulas do, or things that you just kind of wish people knew about doulas?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to confuse like a doula and a midwife a lot. A lot of people assume that you can just get the doula to do the things. Like a midwife is there like as the provider. The midwife is the person who's literally going to help deliver the baby. Like I mentioned earlier, like we're not here to give like clinical advice. So if you say if something's going on in your body and you don't know exactly what it is, I wouldn't be able to tell you, yeah, that's definitely it. You know, like, yeah, you're definitely experiencing X, Y, and Z. That's something you would still have to go to your provider for. That's something that I like to mention to people, or that I hope that people could learn more about doulas, but also seeing that doulas are people who you can, like, it's not somebody you pick this person and you're stuck with this person. Like, this is someone who you have to actually like. And it's okay if you feel like you're not getting the level of support that you need. So I want people to know too that when you look for a doula, it's the same way for anyone. Like, you're still hiring someone to support you. And I think that's something for people to really understand, that you deserve to be comfortable and deserve to just feel at home with the person who's going to be there to witness you.
Yeah, those are, I think, some important points and distinctions to make, especially regarding like doulas and midwives. Sounds like you both care for patients, but doulas are not on the medical side, but that doesn't mean that they're not essential to the care team.
Yeah, and I think it's also learning what it is that you need too, right? Like, how can you expect someone to meet your needs if you haven't sat with yourself to understand your own needs? So that's something I like to challenge people with too. Like, what do you feel it would be best supportive? How can you be best supportive? What does support look like for you? Just being able to really center that person and their needs so they can receive it outwardly, and also understand when their needs aren't being met. So it kind of just trickles down into like this whole spectrum of care, I guess you can say.
Yeah, that's very important. I think ha having people recognize their needs is a great step for anyone, any patient. One of the things that we have been researching for this podcast is maternal morbidity and mortality. And we have found that there are some stark disparities when it comes to maternal mortality in the US, specifically along like racial and ethnic lines with these marginalized people having just worse maternal mortality outcomes. And so I wanted to get your perspective on maybe the root cause of some of these disparities and how the current healthcare system might perpetuate them, because we know that these disparities have just been growing over time despite, advances in medicine or like healthcare funding. So I want your opinion on this topic.
Yeah, so when I sit with that question, like, what is the root cause? The first thing that comes up for me is systematic racism. It's just really, I can't think of anything else. Like, I really sat with it, was like, what else could it be? It's systematic racism. And systematic racism pretty much looks like when you characterize a person when they first come in, this is definitely how they are, and you drop them into this one module. You think of if someone comes in with insurance, right? Like a certain type of insurance, they're automatically going to be grouped a certain way. And unfortunately, people who are part of the BIPOC community tend to have a different type of insurance, one that they can afford that is equate to their levels of what they make. So that's already something. Like a person who has a high-end insurance isn't going to receive the same amount of care as one who may be on government assistance. So that's something that I think of. I also think about the fact that some providers are taught that Black bodies can take a larger amount of pain than another race's body. And that's just horrible to even sit and think that. And when you think of that, that looks like someone coming to you and telling you a numerous amount of times that they're in pain. But it's like, oh, this person is of a certain race, so they must be able to sustain this these large amount of pains, or oh, they'll be okay, or even going into the thoughts of the autonomy, like how some people's autonomy is just stripped away from them because of what race they might fall under. That too is just all the things that I feel like comes into play, and how it's just constantly going, and how dismantling looks like addressing those things, putting things into play so it doesn't really happen. Then also, like, this podcast is something I feel like that's very helpful, because someone who hears from someone else's mouth that, oh, you know, Black bodies actually, they're people too. Like, their amount of pain, that's called resilience. It's not just because of this person is Black, they should be able to take this pain. It's because they know a long history of pain. So they have to sit with certain things. And it's very disheartening to learn that. And even going forward, to some people who come from the BIPOC community are being illegally tested for drugs when they go in. You have moms who will go in and they're just there to get their regular screenings. They're screening their blood for things that could possibly come up during their pregnancy. But I've had people tell me that they've been drug tested without even knowing, just because they come in and they look a certain way, or they meet a certain character. Those are the things that I feel like that causes this, because in all these different umbrellas, that person's not being heard, that person's not being respected, and they're not just being seen as an individual or a human. They're just a checklist at the point, you know, it's just very black and white, not enough room for gray.
Yeah, that was very powerful reflection. So thank you. I just wanted to clarify, use the phrase BIPOC, and just in case people don't know what that means, it
Yeah.
refers to, yeah, just in case, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, a little bit of an umbrella term to try and incorporate all like marginalized races. But yeah, you brought up some important points about how this racism and has like social and structural causes, and how those trickle down into like individual patient and clinician interactions. So it can be difficult to try to think about all the different levels that might be affecting maternal mortality.
Yeah, and I think those are the ones that stick out the most to me, mostly because I've actually been with people who've experienced these things. Like, I've assisted people who've experienced these things. I personally experienced some of these things when I gave birth to my daughter. So it's just believing people when they speak.
Considering all of these disparities and the different aspects that we've talked about, how do you think that doulas fit into this and can help us to reach for birth equity?
When I think of a doula in this state, it refers back to the doula having the resources. It refers back to the doula being someone who can reassure a person when they've navigated these spaces, letting them know that that's not right. That's not a level of care that you should receive. It's the doula reassuring them of the autonomy that every person has. It's the doula being there to support them emotionally after this has happened. Even linking them to other things and resources that they could possibly get to help move through these things, or giving them resources so they wouldn't feel so marginalized, even though you may still be following that structure. Say if someone is unable to afford their groceries, there's plenty of resources out there that this person may just be so weighed down with all the other things in their life that they can't even find, or the resources that they feel like might be out there, but they might lose hope that they can even get it. That's like one of the things that I feel is very powerful with being a community doula, because we have so many people backing us, right? Like, we're a part of a larger outlook of folks. We can reach into our community to speak on, hey, do you know a place that's doing this, or this client needs this? Do you know that someone's doing this? And it kind of just becomes this word of mouth or this chain to be able to assist people. So I feel like the doula just fills in the gaps. Again, it's like that missing link sometimes that a person may need to restore their hope, or they might just need more resources or just a reassurance.
A lot of these things that you mentioned now about connecting people to resources in their community sounds a little bit like kind of what social work and social workers do. So is there, what do you think is the difference between doulas and social workers?
That's a really nice question. I think social workers are more equipped to it, because again, like, it's also learning when to outsource someone. So someone's coming to you saying that, I don't have housing right now. I wouldn't turn them away and say, I'm a doula. I don't do that. Go to a social worker. I see you as a person who is in need. So it's at a point where if I have these resources, if I know there's a place that will take in a mother and a child or take in a pregnant person, then I will let them know. However, if it comes to a point where they are in a crippling need and I cannot find it, then it could be redirected to a social worker. However, we're all in community with each other. It's just not a sense of this is my job, that's not my job when it comes to that. It's just really understanding what can you personally take on. I know, like sitting with social workers too, their job is like a checklist as well, and they are underpaid as well too. They get a lot of things that they have to do that some things may fall through the cracks. So again, like the doula is the person for the link, although a lot of things might come under their umbrella that's not really for us. If there's a way that we can assist that isn't causing harm and we have the necessary resources, we'll be able to give them. But to tell you like a distinctive difference between the two, I wouldn't actually be able to tell you that because I'm not actually fully versed on what a social worker's job is. But I can tell you that if I have the resources to help someone, that I will provide it to them.
Just based on what you were saying, it sounds like doulas really build strong relationships with the people that they care for, and they help them not just with resources and stuff, but also, like you were saying, like that emotional support and physically being present at times. So I feel like that might be a good distinction also. I was doing some research and was seeing that women who have doulas have better birth outcomes, so like decreased rates of preterm birth or decreased rates of C-sections, increased breastfeeding. And so, how do you think that the doulas are able to help create these actually amazing results?
Yeah, I think again, it just leans into the support and just being available for that person. Like, this is someone who's literally tailored to helping you through your transitions versus you going to someone who may or may not be able to help you. For instance, with my current job, just Birth Space, we have literally all the different people who are on that team. So if someone's coming to, writing into us about how they need some type of support and they mention slightly about something going on with their breastfeeding. It's like, oh, well, what is really going on with that? But we have a lactation specialist that we could just send you to. So it's kind of like, again, we have resources that are readily at our fingertips, and we don't see people that are, we don't see black and white as far as like, this is what we can do, what we cannot do. It's like, we have these resources. Let me help you. We kind of become like a one-stop shop with the ability to outsource to those who are also connected within our community. So I think that's what's really helpful. I think the fact that we can easily tap into each other to ask questions, right? To get the resources for the person, that's helpful. Like even with the C-section rates, I think a lot of people when they go into those spaces, they think that if the doctor tells you that you need to get a C-section and that's it. Because some doctors don't go deeper into what the other options are. They're just like, you need a C-section. But sometimes when they come to the doula and ask like a little deeper clarity on that, we ask them more clarifying questions like, would you really need it? Have you had a C-section before? Things that could possibly lead into the C-section. And then let them know that there are other choices. Like, that's not the only thing you have to do unless there is something that is like medically necessary. Right, like a lot of I don't know the specific percentages, but a lot of people who receive C-section don't really need them, and it's really saddening to hear that because a C-section is a surgery. It's a real serious surgery, and a lot of times it's not approached to them that way. So I think us just being able to be clear with them and also to provide actual tangible resources, right? Like sending them documents, like sending them studies and redirecting them so they can sit down and make more informed decisions versus saying, this is what you have to do. It kind of, again, is reinstilling the autonomy for them to be able to make informed decisions for themselves.
It sounds like basically doulas are, like you said, the one-stop point person. You can outsource other resources, but it's easier to interact with that doula instead of interact with all of those individual resources that you might want. And then you were talking about basically being a voice during the birthing process.
Yeah, and like even in the point that we're more like the subconscious voice, because we kind of advocate for people to find their own voice and to be able to make this informed decisions for themselves. I think that's something too that's a misconception too. Some people believe the doula is going to come and the doula is going to talk to the doctor the whole time for you, and you're just going to sit there and just this is not that type of situation. It's really like a partnership, right? Like you're trying to teach this person how to tap back into their inner voice and help them address anything preventing them from speaking up. So I think that's a misconception too. Like we're not typically like the voice for the person, but we try to help them find their voice. I think like as a whole in this setting, we're like the voice, right? Like when you're asking like these direct questions, we could be the voice for people. But when it's in those actual situations, we definitely push for people to find their own voice because it's so important.
That's very empowering, I would say, for the patient to be able to do that. So we've talked a little bit about doulas and how they have impacted maternal mortality and disparities, but that makes me just wonder, are there any disparities inherent in who is able to get doula care? So can you speak to that?
I think that's a big difference between like a community doula and then someone who doesn't identify as a community doula. Community doulas typically are in places where folks typically would not have access to doulas, to folks who typically could not afford a doula, to some that may not even have heard of a doula. A community doula typically assists. And the cost of it is also different. Those community doulas are typically tailored to the specific geographic location. Also, some community doulas are absolutely free. Some of them are on sliding scales, and some of them are just able to, I guess, assist you if you have a lower income versus someone who is in a space in life where they have an unlimited amount of resources where they can afford a doula, someone who is more on the higher end. And also, community doulas tend to take more trainings to be able to assist people who are in these situations. Like we are trained to assist people who may have experienced a high level of trauma based upon where they live or what their background may be. Typically, community doulas are people who live within the community where they are assisting, so they can relate to them in certain type of ways that someone who is outside of that community cannot. Also going back to the whole pool, right, of resources that community doulas have, because community looks like reaching within to get all these different avenues to being taken care of. So that's what that kind of looks like. I think that would pretty much be the difference, but I do feel that as we're evolving, and I say we, I mean like the world itself, that the awareness around doulas is happening. So many places are stepping up and offering trainings for people. But there is definitely still a gap. Like, for instance, I recently moved down here to Georgia, and there are not a lot of doulas in my hometown, specifically Augusta, Georgia. There are not a lot of doulas here. So I can see how there is such a gap in that, and how we could also help affect the numbers that may be happening here, opposed to in a larger city where there may be other organizations that people could reach into and receive and have different avenues to kind of like travel down.
So it sounds like geographical disparities. And then you were talking about community doulas and how they tend to, it sounds like, be a little bit more accessible to people. So what exactly makes a doula a community doula?
Yeah, so tapping back in that to again, like a community doula is someone who more than likely lives into the same space of where they are assisting the person. A community doula typically falls into like a platform of other people who they are actually in community with, like with the outsourcing of things, how I stated that we have like a lactation specialist. We have someone who's a midwife. We have someone who may do therapy, like to be able to outsource people. Not only that, a community doula is someone who the price is also tailored to the area where the person is. They're also more versed in how to assist someone who may be on a marginalized side. And also that looks like the affordability of a doula too is different. Like it's not based upon this doula has XYZ amount of experience. It's based upon this doula is dedicated to serving this specific type of area.
If a pregnant individual was searching for a doula, do you have any like tips for finding one and maybe finding a community doula?
There are search engines that have doulas who have gone through equity type trainings, those who are more versed in, marginalized spaces. One of the search engines is called Sister Midwife, which you can look on there and see like what type of doulas are in your area who has that type of training. Another one is the abbreviation, I believe, is BADT.org. And that stands for like birth advocate doula training. And those folks are also versed in that type of level, and they can type in there and they'll see that. So those are a couple ways that someone can look for them. And depending on their location, I would just try to see word of mouth to see where they are and see if they know, like if anybody knows an area a doula, because that's typically how it happens. It kind of just like flows down. It's like word of mouth a lot too.
Yeah, it sounds like it's such a simple difference in Googling and could get you such different results. So it's just one of those things where you kind of have to know, as you were saying, like doulas are becoming a little bit more mainstream, more people are hearing about them. So just continuing on and getting word out about community doulas then too.
Yeah, for sure.
I was also thinking about how during the pandemic in the hospitals, there was limits on how many people could be in a room with a birthing individual. And a lot of times it was limited to like one person. So you'd have to choose between family member, a friend, or a doula. So I wanted to ask you how doula care kind of changed during the pandemic.
Yeah, that was actually very tough to navigate, like specifically in New York too. I think New York was kind of like the poster child of how it's going to trickle down into the rest of the world. So that was very stressful for the birthing person more than anything, I would say, because having to have worked with someone who, again, is like your link. The person who's supposed to help you and your possible partner get through is very difficult to have to decide if you want your partner or your doula, if you want your mother or your doula, if you want your sister or your doula in there. So that looked very different. I think we leaned deeply into telehealth at that time, right? Like everything started going virtual at that time. At that, I also, a lot of my clients I spoke with during like FaceTime calls before I even met them in person for the birth, just because of those things. And I think I'm speaking more so of the impacts of COVID and things that came versus the pandemic lockdown itself. But it really created like that type of gap, that kind of in-person interaction. When it comes down to having to choose one person or the other, telehealth, we link deep into that. We link deep into like FaceTime calls, as funny as it sounds. And some people were calling their doula on FaceTime while they were in the room with the partner. And even that looked like changing how to speak to the partners and teaching them like how to be hands-on with assisting their folks or the person who is birthing. And then also out of that came my current job, which is just Birth Space, which I spoke on earlier too, which is a virtual platform where virtual doulas. So people will text in and need that kind of help. And we offer like one-on-one videos, check in with folks. We offer phone calls with them. We text them, just all the things that you would want to have in person, you can have it virtually. And that was birthed during the pandemic, which we believe really has helped. And it was very interesting to see that the situation wasn't just in the New York, New Jersey area, because that's how it started. But then later on, the word got out and we started receiving people like from all over the US, like texting in and wanting support and things, which kind of showed us that there is still like a deeper need in those spaces to have someone help them with resources and all the other things.
Yeah, that's amazing. The birth, I guess, of just Birth Space and the whole like move to more virtual platforms. I feel like we saw that in all regards of our life, but no one really would think about how that would transform the whole doula care. Is this something that you think is that might continue even moving forward? Because like you said, there seems to be a need for like access to doulas.
Yeah, because folks can now have doulas and their people in the room, yet we still have people who call in, or we still have people who text in, and they still need the same level of support. So folks that needed it back in the pandemic, which shows you that it's not necessarily the pandemic, is really like the systems that are in place in certain, spaces like hospitals and things that these people aren't receiving the up most level of care that they should receive.
Sounds like a way to just kind of increase access to doulas all around.
Yeah, I think that's really great. Even my mentor, Chanel Porche Albert, was someone who I did that. Like, she started a doula program, and I think it's called Montefiore. She created that program to have community doulas be able to be accessible to folks who are in hospital spaces. And I think that's really beautiful to have that integration because we need that. Like, a lot of times, some people just don't know how to access doulas. Some people don't know the difference, like you said, don't know the difference between a community doula, like the training that's gone behind some community doulas versus someone who just doesn't really have a community focus at mind.
The whole doula community is really transforming and growing from this. And it sounds like on an individual level, like a doula is an advocate for the patient. And so this is just kind of growing the like level of advocacy that a doula can be. And I think that there is systemic change from all of this work. So I was wondering if you could talk about that next.
When you speak of the changes, that kind of makes me think of the Black Mommy Bus Act. That act is something that has been put in place that can help with systematic changes. It's pretty much put there. It started in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a proposal to basically put all these different systems and policies in place so that birthing folks and people who may be in postpartum period can have certain access to things to just kind of bridge those systematic gaps. I don't know if you all are familiar with the numbers of, mortality in the birthing spaces, that Black folks are 3 to 4 times more likely to pass from giving birth than their white counterparts. Native Americans are 2 times more likely to pass, and then Hispanic folks are 1.8 more times more likely to pass from complicated births. And a lot of those births are preventable, which is like the biggest question mark of them all, the fact that there are people who are losing their lives from these systems that are just failing them. So that act itself is pushing to put things in place, such as believe there has a 12-month care that they want to launch for postpartum care for folks. They also want to support some parents who may have mental health issues or have substance abuses. There's some focus around climate in there because climate is really big when it comes to a mother and a baby. Like, the climate changes just for them to have accessibility to certain things. There's also some speaking of having some bills passed that could cover transportation or nutritional or even housing, which are also some things that cause these disparities to people in marginalized locations.
Wow, that is a lot of really good work going on through like one campaign, I guess. And I like that a lot of the action points that they're doing are not necessarily focused around the actual birth, but one of the main tenets of reproductive justice is like the right to raise your child in a safe environment. And so it sounds like that is where a lot of these efforts are focused on.
Yeah, it's focusing on, I like to think of it as preventative care, right? Like, it's getting to it before the issue arises. So someone who is in a safe location would not have the worries or the stress and end up having high blood pressure and it carrying on to lead to other things within their pregnancy versus someone who is in a shelter, someone who does not have accessible funds to get the foods that they need, or can't even get anything to feed their child, may not even know the proper things to feed their child, can't get back and forth to their appointments, so they can't get to the appointments to know what their body is going through. So it's just all these different things that are in there. I really love reading about the postpartum coverage, like 12 months of postpartum Medicare. Like, how beautiful would that be? What gaps will be closed with that? I think postpartum is equally as important as the birthing process, which is why like postpartum doulas are also a thing. Like, if you just need the doula to be there for you after you've given birth to your baby, because that support is just as heavy as when you first learn that you are pregnant.
Yeah, definitely. And the idea that maternal mortality extends until 1 year postpartum. And so, like, this is when a lot of those deaths or awful, debilitating experiences occur. And so, obviously, it deserves some more focus.
Yeah, I think that would be great. And like even thinking of postpartum, we like to think of postpartum that postpartum is forever. Like if you've even given birth to a child, you are still in postpartum. My daughter is 4 and my body is constantly changing. My mind is constantly changing because I'm having to still show up as a parent. It doesn't change like after my baby turns 1. Like they're still going to go through their transitions. I'm still going to go through my transitions. So I think like even having postpartum care for 12 months is beautiful, but it's like, how, what else can we do? What else can we do for the parent, right? What other resources can we put in place for them? But I agree, like having that in place is a beautiful start for sure.
We talked about two of the tenets of reproductive justice. One is the right to have a child. One is the right to raise a child in a safe environment. And the other one is the right to not have a child. With the overturning of Roe versus Wade, I was wondering, is this impacted your work at all so far?
I won't say that it's personally impacted my, like, I haven't had anyone like specifically have issues that are going on. However, I'm very aware of the things that could come up for someone who does not have the choice. Even coming down to someone who would like to terminate pregnancy because it's causing an actual health scare for them. There are some pregnancies that are detrimental to your health that could cause you to, it could be fatal. If you ha actually have your child, and the fact that you will have to sit there and wait on the decision of if somebody can actually do this or, you know, like scurry to get legal matters and cases, very scary of what the future could look like with something of that nature. And then we think about people who are not in a space, right? Like after discussing the people who are not in environmental spaces, they're not in the mental spaces to carry a child, yet they are being forced to carry a child. I think is horrifying to understand like the danger that could come to that parent or to the potential child and the families, because who knows what else could be impacted. So yeah, I definitely can see how so many different folks can be impacted by it.
And do you think that there is a role for doulas in any of this moving forward?
Yeah, I feel like with doulas, again, it still feels like more advocacy work. It still feels like letting people know their choices outside of that. Like if either or were to happen, to still let them know that there are choices and still letting them know there are resources and still letting them know that they are loved, that they are cared for, that, you know, things will be okay regardless of what their outcome may or may not be. And then also knowing when to outsource them to someone else that could potentially help them. So yeah, I do. I feel the weight of a doula, but it also feels like just strengthening the level of support that we already are providing to folks.
You sort of do these things already, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just doing them under different circumstances with different
Doing it
patients.
under different circumstances, yeah, for sure. And then, you know, as someone who serves the BIPOC community, a lot of it for them feels like they don't have a choice. So hearing that something else is thrown in there for them not to have a choice is terrifying. But at the same time, it's like you still show up and you still do the best to allow that person to see that there are other choices for them to have.
And this is also just a major area where advocacy can go a long ways on that individual level or on the larger scale. So there's like a lot of opportunities with
Yeah,
this.
I agree.
I've learned a lot through this conversation about kind of the work of a doula and the impacts of doulas on individuals, on communities. But you know, I'm in medical school and we don't learn about doulas in medical school in our education, even in like our dedicated OB-GYN rotations. We were never formally taught about doulas and their work. So, in your opinion, is there any sort of conflict or pushback between OB-GYN medical field and doula work?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of pushback. Like even the fact that you stated that you don't get exposed to doula as much, right? So that already creates this one type of mind. And then you have someone coming into this space. It's like, hey, let me support this person. But then it's like, well, who are you? What do you know? Like, how are you able to support this person? I think a lot of people, and when I say people, I think like the medical staff may feel that doulas are coming in there to try to take over or to say, you know, this way is the right way, your way is the wrong way, when that's not the focus. The focus is just making sure that the person who is giving birth is being well supported from all ends, because there are things that the medical staff has access to and that the medical staff does that a doula cannot do. And then there are things that the doula has more of a capacity to do, because we're not saying that a nurse or a doctor cannot be empathetic, but the nurse or the doctor also has so many other people that they're running between at that time that they may not be able to give that dedicated empathy, that dedicated emotion and support, you know, in a way that the birthing person may need, or they may not be able to switch it on and off and tailor it to a certain type of way. So I think we should lean into each other and just see how we all are working to support that birthing person.
Both the medical staff and doulas, they have their own role, I would say, in caring for the patient. But right now, they seem very separate, like not a lot of interaction. And so I guess I'm just wondering how we would be able to kind of integrate those two different areas of expertise in a way to best serve the patient.
Yeah, I mean, that could look like even offering more classes in hospitals that are from doulas. Like, what if some patients could go to classes held by doulas? That could look like an integration. Some people like to prepare birth plans, right? And some doctors get kicked back about, oh, you want to plan your birth. How can you plan your birth? But it's like, you know, that's an opportunity too to bridge the gap, because it's like, I did this with my doula. My doula sat down and talked to me about these specific things. I think it's really a beautiful way just for both people to be able to hear each other. So there's just so much room to want to bridge that gap or to create that relationship there. But again, it's also kind of tricky when you think about how the support person has different needs. So it's not like saying this one type of doula will be able to sit for each type of, you know, stand-in person with each doctor. Each doctor is different as well, right? So that'll look very different. I mean, the thing that comes to mind to me for integration looks like holding some type of class or something, just like they have childbirth educational classes that are held in these hospital spaces. Why not have a hire more doulas to do it so they can have more understanding of what doulas are? Or if there are doulas who want to bring in other classes that help support the more emotional side of a pregnant person, that might be helpful too.
You don't have to be in the medical field to be in this medical space and to provide these support.
Yeah, I think like just having that room would probably help a little bit. Just, I mean, the integration can't help until it actually happens. There's nothing you can really do but to bring integration in, like to be action. It's like action-based for sure. But it's also tailored per location and per hospital, per doctor, per everything.
We talked about like the benefits of having a doula. And so you would think that the medical staff, the doctor, would be totally on board with bringing a doula in and like improving these health outcomes. And so I feel like there's something to be done on that regard too, like being able to make referrals to doulas.
Yeah, I think, and like you said, it looks like partnership, right? So that looks like other organizations being in partnership with hospitals. Like I told you about my mentor, her organization is Ancient Song. Ancient Song is in Brooklyn. It's in a partnership with the hospital, you know, like, so that's what it looks like. So they can understand that, okay, these people are here, we're here to help each other so that we can create a better system going forward. It's not about individual come up or individual change. It's more about collective change going forward. So yeah.
I love the point about it being more of a collective change. And maybe that starts one individual, two individuals, but the end goal is total integration.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I guess with that in mind, what does your ideal birth team and birth environment look like?
Yeah, my ideal birth environment looks like, well, this depends. For me, we're gonna say me. So if I was pregnant again, which I am not, what would my birth team look like? Personally, I would want a midwife. And I say that because I am a holistic person. I want to do things as natural, less invasive, less machines, less medicines as possible. So it would look like having a midwife, and not just any midwife, a midwife who is enriched in their community, a midwife who is compassionate about the work that they do, a midwife who will feel like someone who you would just want to have there to witness you. So it looks like me having a midwife there. It looks like me having a doula there, of course, who would be able to help me emotionally, physically, when I'm having certain pains that I might need to move that stagnant energy to other places. Then also being able to set up the environment that I would like. I know we speak about the team, but we also learned through this conversation that environment is also important. So just being able to choose if I wanted to have, even if I'm at home giving birth or if I'm in the hospital giving birth, I would want to be able to decorate my environment the way that I would like it to. Also leaning into an additional support person, which would be either my partner or be a trusted friend or someone who still has the same collective mindset of how to get the baby here, pretty much, and also make sure that I'm okay along that process. And if I couldn't have my midwife, if I had to have an OBGYN, just someone who I've been able to ask questions to along the way, someone who has addressed my concerns, someone who doesn't mind explaining the things to me that I don't have awareness around, having that person on my team. And then also, we all know that sometimes that person is not the one who delivers your baby. So being able to meet the team of people who could potentially deliver my baby and them still be on like that same wave would feel nice too.
It's amazing all of the different things that you have to think about and components that come together. One of the things that you mentioned and that I kind of wanted to speak further on was how you wanted a midwife and like differences in what a midwife can provide for you personally as opposed to an OBGYN. And that made me think about how there might be a difference in acceptance and collaboration with doulas between midwives and OBGYNs. I don't know if that's something that you've experienced or that you can speak to.
I can speak to it. So it's just when you think about the history of a midwife and the history of an OBGYN, midwives have been around forever. Like literally, they were either the people already a part of your village, they were elders who were already a part of your community. And these were the folks who just had well-versed on herbs, they had well-versed on situations that may arise. And these are people who just had a passion for community and people who had a passion for mothers and for babies and for birthing folks. They just had a passion for it. So when I think of a midwife, I mostly meet midwives who want to do it. You know, it's not just something, oh, they woke up and said it's a career choice. And not saying that that is what OBGYNs are. I'm just saying, personally speaking, on midwives, typically sounds more like a calling. They feel called to do the work, they feel honored to do the work. It's also less invasive. And when I speak of less invasive, you're not going to get a million ultrasounds, right? Like you're going to get the heart rate detected, and they might not use the actual fetal monitor. They may use other contractions that aren't hooked up to something. Like it's like just very centered in original, like just prehistoric type things, things that haven't been developed over the past 40 or 50 years, like things that we have been using way before then. And then when we think of interventions, I feel a midwife is really going to sit down and look at all the possibilities for you before saying, let's go and hook you up to Pitocin, right? Like that's not going to be the first thing that a midwife suggests. The midwife might suggest you going home and trying different positions. They lean deeper into holistic practices, where I feel OBGYN leans more into westernized or medical practices. And that's just something that I personally resonate with more as someone who's deeper into a holistic care. Both ways can get you an outcome that you may desire. However, me personally speaking, I would prefer to go with someone who's more holistic, which would be like a midwife.
Maybe OBGYNs and that side of the more institutionalized medicine could learn a few things from midwives about this integration of care and incorporating doulas into a care team.
Yeah, and there are some midwives that are only located in hospitals. So I think like it's there. There's still like more work to do, but there are midwives that are in hospitals. Not everywhere, but in certain cities they have midwives in that way and in that structure, but they are still like very confined into the way that they have to present themselves and the way that they do work and things. But I think that there's still more room for deeper integration, but I see that it's there. It just needs a little more tweaking, I guess you can say, or a little more learning experience on both sides.
So, I mean, we've talked a lot about the work the doulas do, the benefits of doulas, but it's pretty apparent that there's still a ways to go in terms of really taking advantage of the work the doulas do and the benefits that they can provide.
Yeah, I feel the same too. I do. I think we, again, like we are progressing. It's really amazing to see that there are just so many offerings and so many organizations, so many trainings, so much awareness about it. A lot of people hear the word doula before they even know the meaning and they're intrigued, which I think is cool. but yeah, there's definitely still a lot of room for improvement for sure.
Hopefully, just learning more about the doulas, the work they do on an individual level, on the community level, on a policy level. Awareness is always the first step towards change. That's what this podcast is about a little bit. And just like also us personally, like learning these things from you, these stories, it's just the first step, I would say, towards change.
Yeah, it's the first step, and I think there's so much room for growth. Again, like one, I'm very honored that you all chose to have me on here, so thank you so much for that. And then the fact that you all have created this to be so people can have it, so y'all can lean deeper into it, I think is really beautiful. That is what it looks like to have awareness and to have change, is to have these type of tools in places for people so they can understand the different levels of care that's out there and how they can integrate that in their own personal practices or even when they're in these hospital spaces. So, thank you for that. Yeah.
Thank you as well so much for speaking to us, being so kind to share all of these experiences. As we like wrap up, are there any concluding statements, final thoughts that you want to share?
I do want to put out there again the name of my birthing community that's associated with Just Birth Space. You can type in justbirthspace.org and it should come up. You'll be able to see how we are doing virtual doula care and able to assist folks. I think that could be very, very helpful. And yeah, I think that's great. And if y'all want to look me up, y'all can look me up too. My name is Christine Miller. My personal business is called belovedbirthvillage.com. So if you want to tap in there to see some of the great things that I'm trying to implement down here in the South, that's great too. Yeah, just thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for your time and your thoughts.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Christine. So statistically, there are many benefits to a comprehensive care program that incorporates the help of doulas. Individuals who receive doula support during their pregnancy are 4 times less likely to have a preterm or low birth weight baby, 2 times less likely to experience a birth complication involving themselves or their baby, 80% less likely to have a non-medically indicated C-section, and significantly more likely to initiate breastfeeding. These benefits exist because there is increased education and resources to better prepare for labor, delivery, and postpartum care for both babies and parents. Doulas help patients create birth plans and are advocates for patients during delivery to ensure that the birth plan is followed or adjusted as per their unique wants and needs. They help address the psychosocial needs of patients that certainly contribute to their physical and overall health. Currently, citywide doula initiative is one of the ways New York City has incorporated doulas into a healthcare model. New York State recently rolled out a new report on maternal mortality to address these systemic inequities and create safer birth experiences for mothers and families. One of the major conclusions by the Maternal Mortality Review Board was that structural racism and its impact on birth outcomes must be addressed through an integrated approach that reaches the healthcare system across New York State, through the integration of community-based resources such as doulas visiting nurses, community health workers, and patient navigators, and telehealth visits. In September 2022, New York City Mayor Eric Adams signed a package of seven bills to promote education, increase transparency, and expand access to maternal health care for pregnant New Yorkers. Specifically, Intro 472A and 478A codify the inclusion of doulas in this current policy measure. Intro 472A codifies the program launched earlier this year to train doulas and provide doula services to residents in all five boroughs. Intro 478A launches an education campaign in New York City to raise public awareness about the benefits and services provided by doulas and midwives. On a more national policy level, there has been an increase in the number of states implementing doula coverage by Medicaid. The National Health Law Program's Doula Medicaid Project tracks Medicaid implementation efforts since 2019. Each year since then, the number of states introducing bills related to Medicaid coverage for doula care or working to expand access to doula care in other ways has steadily increased. As of November 2022, there are now more than half of all states that are either actively providing Medicaid coverage for doula care in the process of implementing such coverage, or that are taking some statewide action related or adjacent to Medicaid coverage for doula care. Similarly, in late October 2022, the Biden-Harris administration announced that more than half of all states had expanded access to 12 months of Medicaid and CHIP coverage after pregnancy. Expanding access to doula care for Medicaid enrollees, along with the extension of Medicaid postpartum coverage, are both key strategies for improving maternal health and addressing racial disparities in maternal health, mortality, and morbidity. Another law currently in legislation debate is the Black Maternal Momnibus Act of 2021. It is a package of 12 bills addressing the maternal health crisis the United States is currently facing. The legislation advances critically important policies that cover various dimensions of maternal health among Black women and makes robust investments to ensure quality care and social support pregnant and postpartum women desperately need. So, what is the role of medical students? What are some next steps we as medical students and medical educators can take? To start, we can advocate to add doulas into the medical curriculum during both preclinical and clinical years. Throughout the many times we are learning about reproductive health in our medical school education, the concept of reproductive justice is not satisfactorily addressed, if it is even addressed at all. It is up to medical students to advocate for a comprehensive medical education that teaches them how to incorporate reproductive justice in their care as socially conscious future physicians. But even outside of OBGYN, we as medical students are first and foremost patient advocates that should aim to recognize patient needs and relay or directly address their concerns. As we have seen through the examples of maternal morbidity and mortality and through the gaps in patient care that doulas fill, sometimes the healthcare system as we know it is complicit and does not treat all patients with the same degree of attentiveness and thoroughness. We all approach patient interactions with our own biases. We must reflect on these and be reminded of our role as advocates in all spaces, in the emergency department, on the hospital floors, in primary care clinics, and of course in labor and delivery, so that we can provide the best care possible wherever we end up. Thank you for listening to this episode of Between the Lines, What Your Medical School Didn't Teach You About Health Equity. Once again, I'm Ikra.
And I'm Kayla.
And we hope you learned as much about doulas today as we did. Thank you.